Hello and welcome to another Linguistics Career Cast, the podcast devoted to exploring careers for linguists outside academia. I'm your host, Laurel Sutton. Quick announcement, the Linguistics Career Cast has a Patreon. This podcast has been running for 3 years now, and all the work has been done for free by me and my producer, Gregory Gray. To date, we've been fortunate enough to have some financial support from the Linguistics Career Launch, a volunteer group, of which I am a part, that provides information and resources to linguists interested in career exploration. I want to keep this podcast going. There are so many people I want to interview and so many topics and resources to cover, and a steady funding model would be a big help in making that happen. The money will go to web hosting fees, better audio editing software, and upgraded recording equipment. We won't be offering premium content or merch, but there might be an occasional Patreon podcast if I've got some exciting news or events to announce, and in exchange for monetary support, you will get my actual, genuine, heartfelt gratitude and the satisfaction of knowing that you are supporting career options for linguists. Go to patreon.com/linguisticscareercast to check out the different membership levels. And if you'd like to make a one-time donation, there is now a big donate button at the top of our website at linguisticscareercast.com. Thank you, and now back to the show. This episode is an audio version of a virtual panel held at the Linguistics Career Launch in the summer of 2024, titled User Experience Research for Linguists. The moderator is Daryl Penta, and the two panelists are Josh Martin and Miram Kim. In this session, the panelists explored their journeys into UX research and what prepared them for the kind of work they do now. They share insights into the variety of UX careers, relevant experience in academia, and how to approach your job search. Topics include user experience, user research, human interaction, ChatGPT, speech science, AI, and job interviews. Links to the panelists' LinkedIn profiles are in the show notes. This episode of Linguistics Career Cast is generously sponsored by Amazon Science.
There it is. Thank you, Tamaya. And hi, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us today for the User Experience UX Research for Linguists panel. I'm going to introduce myself and then hand it over to the other panelists, Josh and Miram, to introduce themselves. My name is Daryl Penta, and I'm currently a senior staff UX researcher at ServiceNow, where I've been for just about 4 months. I'm also an associate professor in Bentley University's UX graduate program. So I've been working in UX research for about 7 years. Before joining ServiceNow, I was a senior researcher at Google for 4 years, and I've worked at a couple of smaller companies before that. So in terms of my linguistics background, so my PhD work was in psycholinguistics. I did experimental research there, focusing on language production. And I also have a master's in applied linguistics. In that case, I focused on theories of second language acquisition. And during the time I was working on that, I also was paid to work as a corpus linguist, so kind of a broad background in linguistics. I'll turn it over to our next panelist, Josh Martin.
Hi, everyone. I'm Josh. I am currently a user researcher at Spotify, where I've been for about 2 years. Prior to that, this is the job that I got directly coming out of my PhD. So again, that was 2 years ago. My PhD work in linguistics was like very formal syntax semantics interface work, a little bit of experimental stuff, a little bit of field work. Before that, my undergraduate background is in cognitive science. I think that's just about everything for this. I've got one post-academic job experience, so that's what it is.
Awesome. Thank you, Josh. And we'll pass it over to Miram.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for coming in. I'm really honored to be here as a panelist. So again, my name is Miram Kim, and I'm currently a senior linguist in ServiceNow. So I'm a colleague of Daryl. So happy to be in the same company as Daryl's. And I've been in ServiceNow for about 10 months now. So I joined the company last September, and that is my First official job outside of academia, actually. So I did my linguistics. All my degrees are in linguistics, and my PhD was about cognitive science and phonetics. So I did research on speech accommodation. So it's like you listening to me for this hour, you'll be speaking like me a little bit more. And if any of you speak today, including the panelists, I'll be speaking more like you guys too. So we are speech perception and production systems are connected because we're good people and we're interested in each other. So that's what I did. So it's a cognitive science, also linguistics background. And after that, I actually joined business school, University of Kansas Business School as a faculty there. And there I did research on how to connect my expertise in cognitive science and linguistics to business questions. So my dependent measure has been changed to how we can work together better and how we can earn money better and things like that. So and so I worked and taught there for 8 years, and that really helps. That really helps me adapting to this industry. So now actually my official title is not UX, although I've been involved in many UX questions, and also I was officially working in a I have been working in a UX project. So I think I have some things I can share, although my official title is not UX yet. So that's me. So thank you so much.
Of course. Awesome. Thank you, Nidam. Cool. So just for the audience's kind of like model for how we do this, we thought it would be helpful to kind of prepare some answers for just like a handful of questions. And what we'll do is we'll start with those questions. We'll kind of each of the panelists will take the time to answer. And then we'll basically turn it over and open it up to the audience. We'll save like about 15 minutes for that. And then if there's time, we'll wrap it up with sort of like final words of wisdom. So I'll kick things off with the first question, and I'll actually pass it over to one of the panelists to answer first. And the first question is, what was your career trajectory to get into your current position? Was it the plan? Did you stumble into it somehow? When did you decide that you wanted this kind of role? Meetam, you did speak to some of this, but I'm wondering if you would mind picking that up a little bit.
Yeah, so thank you for giving me the first question. So I thought I would be in academia for my entire life, as many of you do. And then things got difficult, as also as many of you are experiencing. I couldn't work in that environment anymore, and then I had to find out what I can do in the industry. So I asked around to my friends who have been already in an industry, and they said you can do UXR. You can, because I did speech science, you can become a speech scientist. Also, you can do project management, product management, and because I was in business school, I can do business consulting. That's what they said. So I actually tried all of those. I tried all of those trajectories. I just wanted to see what works for me. So this was December of 2022. So I've been in this territory for about a year and a half. And I think I was really fortunate that I was born to the industry at the same time as ChatGPT. So I learned a lot from it. I saw the hype, I saw all the capabilities and possibilities and the problems, especially the problems and the perspective as a cognitive scientist or linguist. So I thought, oh, there's a thing that I can do. There's a thing I can contribute to with my own expertise because engineers are not really seeing them. So I did many things, including, of course, writing a resume and applying to 1,000 jobs. I didn't even count. So I don't know how many applications I submitted. And thanks to that, actually, my resume, I think it's still somewhere. It's always flowing around. So I'm getting calls from recruiters all the time, thanks to that. People say that cold application or like untargeted submission is not good. Of course, I don't think it's the most desirable practice you can do. But in my case, I was just not sure what I can do. And I was just not sure about my target. I didn't have a target. So that's what I had to do. And it kind of worked because a recruiter contacted me sometime in summer of 2023, so last year. And then she said, do you want to have an interview with ServiceNow? And I said, yeah, why not? I didn't have any high hope at all because once I was scammed by a recruiter. So I didn't have any high expectation, but it worked out. So that's where I am. But in the ServiceNow perspective, all this actually makes sense. Like everything is kind of lined up so that I can be here because with the birth of ChatGPT, every company had to build a large language model. And large language model is like a hippo, very voracious hippo that has to have language every day. So it has to be served with good food. And that's why ServiceNow, as one of the companies that had to build a large language model, decided that they needed a specific team of linguists. So that's how I was also sucked in to this like hype. And then, so that's how I was, thank you. So that's how I'm a senior linguist now. And of course, I was really grateful and I've been grateful. This is a great team and everything's really interesting. I'm learning a lot. I've learned a lot about how to work in the industry and how my expertise and also your expertise, if you are still seeking jobs, are really, really crucial in being successful in an industry, not just in academia. So I learned a lot of I just got confirmation that I can be a good fit here too, not just in academia. So that was good. But at the same time, as I said, I'm a speech scientist. So I have to have some kind of speech project going around me. And large language model is basically a text model at this point, unless it's not, unless it's a multimodality model. So, and then because of my background in cognitive science, I had to have some kind of mind-seeking research in what I do. So that's why I kind of branded myself on LinkedIn. If you have ever checked my LinkedIn, I call myself a speech UXR because that's what I really want to do, although it's not my official title yet. So that way, actually, I could be connected to so many people in the industry, not just in ServiceNow, who are interested in sort of speech and UXR. So that's how I'm kind of navigating this industry world to get towards where I really want to be. Which is, I think, UXR. So not just UXR, but UXR also, I'm interested in product design too, because very ironically, as an academic, one of the things I was not perfectly satisfied with was that the end results of being an academic is a paper. And I think I really, really wanted to make something tangible. So I think I want to do product management too and someday. But I'm really glad that I'm in that trajectory. So that's my journey. Sorry for a long explanation, but
Sounds like an interesting journey. This is it's worth hearing about. That's awesome. Josh, do you mind picking up the mantle from here?
yeah, for sure. I don't know if I can cover everything that was in that answer. But I can say similarly that this path was absolutely not like the predestined plan for me. I went directly from undergrad into grad school, and had a moment after I had gotten into grad school where I realized I sort of stopped and was like, huh, I actually didn't have a backup plan. Like, if that didn't work out, I hadn't even thought about it. Wasn't pure confidence, but I just hadn't even thought about what the other thing would be. And that lesson right before I graduated college did not make me any better at considering alternatives during the PhD, because I still, it took sort of until really the summer before the final year of my PhD that I started to entertain, okay, maybe there are other things. In large part for me, that was motivated by the kind of third and fourth years of my PhD were like the peak lockdown years of COVID. I ended up living places that I didn't really want to be and feeling very disconnected from my community and realizing, one of my kind of best postdoc potential options was going to be like move to, a not particularly big city in Germany by myself. And that kind of it didn't sort of jive with what I had learned about my own values during COVID. So I started poking around for other things. It really wasn't like a I've done a bunch of research and figured out that UX is the thing, and I'm going to go sort of aggressively target that. In fact, I think the most helpful learning experience to know that I was really qualified for a UXR job was being in the interviews for the UXR job, and seeing that sort of those things just came a little bit more naturally than interviews for other positions. And so that was part of the, kind of process in figuring out that this really makes sense for me. I think that it's worth saying that I was applying to academic jobs kind of the whole time, the last year of my PhD as well. And it really was deeply stressful to try to make the big decision about, am I going to be an academic or am I going to be not an academic? I don't think I ever really resolved that decision. What I ended up resolving was, okay, I have this and this job offer in the industry in front of me, and I have like this and this sort of realistic postdoc in front of me. I'm going to try to pick between those jobs as opposed to picking between like the big spheres of both things. And that was a lot easier and a lot more concrete, and sort of ended up with me where I am now. And but that really was like all while I was procrastinating writing the dissertation.
So, and my answer is actually sort of a weird conglomeration of a lot of the things that you guys are describing. Like, yeah, I definitely did not intend to get into this field at all. In fact, I was pretty happy making like next to no money working in various ways as a linguist or studying linguistics. And I did, as an undergraduate, I did have some experience. Like, I basically was doing some freelance front end web development, for side money. And done a couple of like really small research projects for some startups while I was in grad school. But yeah, I never really thought about a life outside of linguistics. But I could see the writing on the wall as far as like my prospects for getting a job in academia, especially in the field of psycholinguistics, which basically is like nobody cares about. So I was really lucky that I had a grad school colleague, a great friend, another linguist, who was exploring UXR jobs and basically said, you really should be considering this. And so after getting my doctorate, I was actually looking for 6 months for a job. I think I had applied to like 110, 115 positions. I got two job offers out of that whole experience. And I accepted one of them. And from that point forward, it was really a lot more, I would say it was a lot easier to just find the next opportunity that might, help me develop and grow. So not planned, totally stumbled into it, and I'm sort of lucky that that happened. So in let's pick up the question, the next question, which is about the types of research you do in your current role, methods, topics that you explore, and again, Josh, hope you don't mind. I'll turn it over to you to get us started.
Yeah, absolutely. So the research that I do at Spotify, I'm in the area of the company labeled personalization. So I am mostly studying how do we make the connections between music and the people who are listening to it? How do we serve you recommendations at the appropriate times with the appropriate context, understand what kind of signals you're giving that suggest that you like or don't like something, or all the alternate interpretations of your signals can be. And in particular, lately, I'm focusing on what I tend to call our like user-facing AI products. It's not a secret that like most of Spotify is AI to some degree. That's what it means to be an algorithm. But the things that like say AI on them and have, for example, our kind of robot DJ that talks to you, in an AI-generated voice. Those kinds of features where we're really watching like how users interact with like personifications of the algorithm and how to make that work is kind of been my research focus lately. To do that, the projects that we are doing are largely pretty diverse mixed methods stuff, but my specific role is like 95% qualitative. That's kind of the niche that I am going to be stronger and faster at. And could I crunch some of the numbers myself? Yes. But could a data scientist on my team do it faster and better? Also, yes. So I will let them do it. So the output is diverse, but from my perspective, I'm mostly interviewing people, writing surveys, doing diary studies, and trying where I can to introduce sort of more interesting experimental variations into those things and kind of pull in slightly modified techniques for how to collect diary data over time, for example.
I love my Spotify DJ, by the way. The Gen AI voice gets me every time.
Awesome.
Meetam, how about you? How about you?
Yeah, so like I said, my official title is not UX, but I was really fortunate to have a team who welcomed me as a go-to person for any language task or human mind. So I just got a really good opportunity to do a usability test for them. And then I don't think I can really tell detail about the project but yet. But what I can say is that we had not many participants for the usability test, as I realized, like in academia, like as an experimental psychologist, like experimental linguist, I would want to have, I don't know, at least 20, at the least 20, and then it'll be good if I can get 100, right? And then I would be interacting with every single of them, and then I would want to control all conditions as much as possible so that all the numbers are legit, which was impossible, impossible in this usability test because we had a really we had many constraints. We had to have a result very soon. And then the condition of the participant was also very limited. So anyway, so I just thought I would do my best. So I had to learn. I thought I would. I already knew that I had to lower my standards and then still try to extract as many insights as possible. So what I did was to make the interviews as more structured, as structured as possible, so that the experience with each and every participant can be as similar as possible. And then I also added some, so it's an interview test, so it's a qualitative research, but I wanted to make it a little bit more quantitative. So I added some kind of conditions where I can get numbers. So I measure the time difference between the moment I say the question and the moments they get to the answer. And that really gave great insight and great numbers for the leadership. Because if it takes short, it means good for a service in terms of service. If it takes long, it's not good, right? And then and it could give, instead of saying it takes longer, I could give them numbers. So it was, which was based on my expertise as a cognitive scientist. So that's what I did as much as possible. And it was a great experience. I could see that in this really, really limited and not desirable condition, I can still get valuable insights, and which can be expanded later with more control study and get confirmation, better confirmation later. So that's a very small piece of UXR experience I got in the industry.
It's a great reminder, though, about how often the one of the differences, I mean, there are many differences between academic research and UXR, but the need for flexibility and the need to be able to provide value to a business, which sometimes means shifting gears, and so that's great. In my case, yeah, I would say most of my career, I feel like I've been really lucky in that I've my focus has been on employee experiences, and so my users are my colleagues, and that's something that I really value. I'm doing less hands-on research these days than in the past. Most of the stuff I'm doing now is sort of strategic planning, but I've done all kinds of research. I think as my scope has kind of gotten larger, I find myself relying more and more on like quantitative methods, but I do love user interviews. I've done all kinds of like ethnographic studies. It's generally for me the decision about what kinds of methods to use really boils down to like what's going to be the best way to get the answers that my partners and stakeholders need. But in general, I opt for like mixed methods approach whenever I can. So cool. So all right, so we've got kind of one more of these prefab questions. I think we're good on time here. This is a question about how a background in linguistics kind of fits into your current role, or how you see linguistics preparing people for like research roles in general. I guess I'll take this one first, and then pass it off. So I actually think that linguistics has been the reason why I'm able to do this job. Like, it would probably honestly take me about 5 hours to go through every single way, every insight that I've gotten from linguistics, either from theoretical perspective or even like a methodology perspective, and actually use that in the context of my job. I actually tell my colleagues all the time that I'm really just an underemployed linguist who happens to have a side hustle as like a UX researcher. But like my true feeling about the entire thing is that I think that language is pretty much like it's central to the human experience, right? It like defines our species. And so when we talk about user-centered design, like we really I don't see how you can do user-centered design if you're not really centering things around language, which is so important to the human experience. And so for me, being a linguist fit like super well with how I approach my work. So yeah. That's that in a nutshell. And Josh, how about you?
Sure. I'm going to try to go through like a whole bunch of different reasons really shallowly and quickly. I think there are rare but occasional instances in which like actually having specific linguistic knowledge is beneficial. So sometimes I'm able to detect that there's like a scope ambiguity in a survey question that will cause problems that like someone else might not have noticed. We recently, I think 2 days ago, launched the like Spanish version of our AI DJ, and being able to do, have some context for the research about how the languages might need to get adapted was helpful there. That's not most days or most weeks that that's the ways in which linguistics is relevant. I think one great thing about a linguistic background is that you get exposed to a bunch of different data types and types of data collection. We have the really, really kind of qualitative, messy human fieldwork corpus kinds of data. And then we also have much more controlled experimental context. We have neurolinguistics, we have all computational stuff. And it's really good as a UX practitioner to be able to evaluate and sort of synthesize a bunch of different data types that are not really superficially related to each other, and also pick what kinds of methods are appropriate for different types of questions. As a little tip, that's also one of the most common like things that people I think are looking for in interviews, is your ability to make that kind of methodological determination. So that's really valuable. I also think it's valuable that linguistics is situated in this spot in sort of academia in knowledge production that interfaces with so many different disciplines of different types. You have historical linguists and classicists and philologists and philosophers of language, and then also the psychologists, the neuroscientists, the computer scientists, the anthropologists, etc. And for any industry role, but in particular this kind of research role, being able to talk to a bunch of people with different kinds of backgrounds and common ground and priorities about the same research that you're doing is really, really valuable. And have being able to sort of give presentations about the same project to like other researchers, data scientists, product people, design people, etc., and have that kind of adaptive communication that you get from being in this very like center of many Venn diagrams field like linguistics is really helpful. And then the last thing I think is maybe the biggest one for me, which is that, sure, language studies specifically doesn't happen a lot in my current job, but one of the core things that we do as linguists is we are interested in these sort of subconscious rules and structures in people's minds that they can't directly explain to us. We can't go to a speaker of a language and say, hey, why are these four sentences starred ungrammatical and these four grammatical? Tell me the rule. We have to come up with these kinds of like indirect archaeological non-biasing methods to like pull out stuff from people's brains that they know because it motivates their preferences and behaviors, but they don't know that they know or know how they know. And user research is often a lot like that. We are interested in what are the kind of rules and structures that are really deeply kind of underlying why people say the things they say and behave the way that they do. But we can't just say like, hey, tell us, you know, what you tell us what you think, tell us what we should do here. We have to do that same kind of how can I sort of pickaxe at the parts of your brain that you don't know are there? And so that's not language exactly, but I think being trained in answering that kind of research question in linguistics makes you really well trained for answering that kind of research question in a UX context.
Yeah, right on, right on. Yeah, great. And cool. You know, you can take us home for this one. This is our last one before turning it over to the audience.
Yeah, you know what? As many of you are seeking jobs in the industry as a linguistic background person, linguistics did itself did not give me and many of you the job. So one would say, one can ask, like, why did you do linguistics? Is it useful? Like, wasn't it just a waste of time? But you know what? I really, really think that I had to do it, and that is a foundation of what everything I do, and that is linguistics is a foundation of everything we do, all humans, just like Daryl and Josh manifest, because that's what I've been always saying in business school too. So how can you do business? How can you earn money from other people's pocket? You have to talk really well. So this is the foundation of it, a business, any collaboration, anything we do. So when you think about business, it's about stealing your customer's mind. And how can you do that? You have to understand them. So that's about UXR. And even UXR is in the framework linguistics for me, more specifically, accurately, top communication. So it's about the communication between two or more multiple different parties. So how can we have common ground, which Josh just mentioned, between the two parties, between the business and the customers, and how can we make that communication flow well so that customers can benefit from our products and we can earn money? Right. So it's going on and on and on. So it's all about communication and linguistics to me. So this framework was given to me by my training in linguistics. So if it's just foundational to me. And I think you can have that mindset. I think we all have that mindset. You can emphasize that whenever you're doing interviews or any communications in the business setting, because that's your superpower. I truly believe.
I agree. I love that. Superpower 100%. All right. Awesome. So what we're going to do is turn it over to you guys. And I think we'll welcome questions. If you do have a question, might be useful to unmute or go on camera, but you can direct a question towards the panel at large or to an individual panelist. And we'll try to get through as many as we can. And for the panelists, I would say if it occurs to you, or if you see an opportunity to maybe talk about like the one golden nugget of advice, please feel free to add that into your response if it makes sense. But that's it. Let's turn it over to you guys. Shirley, you were first up on the screen here. Please take it away.
Hi. First, thank you for a really informative panel. My question is, when you're applying to jobs in UX, is it helpful or important to have a professional website and or a portfolio that you can show?
Great question. So about a portfolio or a website, I'd be curious to hear how Josh or Miram feel about this. I have, I think, my own perspective, but I'm not ever sure if it's accurate. So like Josh?
Yeah, I can say something here. So again, this is relatively anecdotal, but the fact that I can tell you 100% is that I didn't have either of those things when I got the job at Spotify. I did have to like put together a presentation about a portfolio in the application process, and so doing that earlier probably would have been helpful. I think there's a thing that I've noticed a lot, which is that sometimes the portals for applying to UX jobs are the same portals that are used for UX design jobs, and it may request a portfolio even when they don't actually care. They didn't mean to ask for one from researchers. So keep an eye out there. I think the exercise of going through creating a portfolio of your projects is a really, really valuable one. Less because then you have a portfolio, but more because then you've practiced how do I talk about previous linguistics projects to a non-linguistic audience? And that's the part that really matters. So I do recommend you do it, but I think, keep in mind that it's actually more of a training process for yourself than you should expect that a lot of the jobs you apply to are going to request that upfront and evaluate you really strongly because of it.
Yeah, I would
I
also agree. So, because I mean, it can be required, or it can be just an optional. But it's always good to have something to explain about you. So why not building it when you have time?
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect. I'm perfectly aligned with these guys. So yeah, I think that great question. Awesome. Thank you, Shirley. Who else has got a question?
Yes, we have some questions in the chat. One is from McKenna. McKenna says, "I'm already working in UX as a generalist, and I don't have any degrees in linguistics, but I've taken several courses. What qualifications or certifications do you guys think would be beneficial if I want to continue working in UX, but specializing in language, linguistic research, and design?"
I mean, my gut sort of tells me. Sorry, Joyce, you might have a better answer than this. I guess
I was
just kind
specifically shaking my head that I don't think I have a good answer to this question.
of. Yeah, I mean, I would say my kind of gut reaction to that is that there's so much variability just in terms of companies, jobs, positions, what's available that it's probably hard to point to like a single sort of suggestion on like, hey, get this certificate, that get this degree. Then it would be to maybe like see what people are asking for in job postings, right? Like use that maybe as a source of information to help you help steer you. So if you see something that might speak to a qualification or something that you don't feel like you have, you could use that. I also don't think there's any prerequisite that having a linguistics degree is sort of needed for a UXR job or for that matter, like a PhD or anything. The industry is pretty broad, so but that's just my take. And if anybody else has a thing to add to that, of course, would love to hear it.
What I know about having a linguistics and it being beneficial is when you want to become a linguist. So in my team of
Right.
linguists, we have to have a linguistics degree to have a better chance of promotion. So that's about it in terms of what I know. But I'm not sure about having a linguistics degree or certificate and becoming a UXR researcher. I don't really know about that.
Yeah, sorry, probably not the most helpful answer, but maybe gave you some direction there. Great. So were there more questions in chat? I'm guessing there probably
Yeah,
are, or
I'm
yeah.
keeping an eye on them. I'm putting some
Awesome.
answers in the chat so that I think
Oh,
are short
nice.
and efficient. But
Oh, awesome.
Althea is asking, how did we highlight our linguistics experience during the application and interview process? My answer to this is kind of like what I was saying at the end of my previous answer about not specifically the language stuff, but kind of the structure of what types of questions, what types of hypotheses am I used to evaluating, and kind of giving enough detail about your prior work to show. Yeah, this type of flow of like, I wanted to answer this kind of question, so I use this kind of method is similar to the type of flow that I'd be asked to do here. I talked relatively little about actual concrete linguistics work. I think you have to give enough detail to make yourself sound different from just any other PhD student who's talking about being able to do research or non-PhD student, et cetera. But you want to kind of keep it at the level of like, how you might talk to your parents about the value of a linguistics degree, I think, rather than getting, and then much more detailed about the methodologies and stuff you were using. But the linguistic stuff should be like good kind of extra meat and set dressing to the skeleton, which is like your ability to actually do research.
Yeah, definitely. I think that there's more value in, thinking about the transferable skills and highlighting what those transferable skills are. I personally have never had much luck with people engaging on the actual content of the linguistic stuff I've done until after I've been hired, at which point they're way more receptive to it. But during the interview, I think, what Josh just said definitely resonates with I think, what I've experienced. And Meetup, do you have a perspective on that as well?
Yeah, so I totally agree. So UXR might not be totally about language or linguistics itself, but like I said before, language and linguistics are the foundation of what we do, our human mind. So when we say UXR is a practice of seeking human minds, we're just so good at the methodology and the veneer of the core of human mind. So maybe that's that way you can emphasize what you do and your strength in the UXR.
Love it. Awesome. So yeah, we've got 5 more minutes, which means I think we've got time for a couple more questions. And then again, if the panelists feel like they've got sort of final words of wisdom, I'd love to do that before the end of our time here. But Josh, are you moderating the chat? Is there anything that's particularly standing out, or is there an open question, or does anybody want to volunteer a question in here?
There's a bunch of questions about how to make a portfolio. I think that's probably not one that we can answer kind of live here, but if any of us have examples of good ones that we've seen, maybe that's a thing we could share later or with someone who connects with us on LinkedIn. Someone is asking about, are we specifically talking about people with PhDs? No, I think that's just how we are talking because that's our personal experience. I don't think that having a PhD is a specific thing that's super important other than like the different, if you have a PhD versus a bachelor's, are you more likely to get the research job with a PhD? Yes, but not because of the degree, because you have at least 5 more years of research experience.
Exactly.
That's the relevant part. It's not fair to make that comparison. None of this stuff should be taken to apply to specifically PhD people. We've got another hand coming. I will say there are questions about like the UX job market saturation, et cetera. I have no idea. That's probably not something that we're, too statistically aware of.
Yeah. So is it for us too? Do you have a question?
Yeah. Hi. Thanks. It's been a very nice panel to be part of. I had a question specifically about whether or not, like, because, for example, as someone with a background in linguistics and like cognitive psychology and neuroscience, I was wondering if when applying for UX jobs, if I should emphasize, like if I should not mention as many of the type of work that I've done specifically, for example, on natural language processing or like neuroscience or like, so I was wondering if I should like most specifically focus on the part that I worked on human judgment, for example. I was wondering if that is important or if mentioning that I have technical skills will actually help getting a job.
Yeah, I think it helps because if you have experience and expertise in an NLP, especially, it's directly related to AI, which is a huge market now. So when we have AI technology, it requires UXR too, because it's going to be served to the customers as a product. So AI cannot be given. I read today, actually, on LinkedIn by someone that ChatGPT is not AI revolution, is a UX revolution. So because AI has been with us for a long time, but it is now being served to the general public. And so that was a UI revolution. So with that mind, I think you can emphasize your background in NLP. You just have to frame it that way, that this is good for the UXR. You have a great expertise in the biggest market right now. And then you can do a UXR about it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I have a follow-up to that I think captures sort of like my golden nugget, and that actually is really about just the process of really, there's a process involved with understanding how what your narrative is. And a lot of it involves kind of looking at what skills are being asked for and trying to be as kind of explicit as possible when you're providing your resume to kind of speak to those open, like to those skills. I initially hit the market thinking I would just throw everything in my resume because, I'm a linguist and I'm a psychologist and I'm also like an expat. But what I've found is that like, there's also some value in kind of being streamlined and brief about it. And for example, if I have two bullet points that kind of speak to the same skill, I only need one of them if I can highlight another skill. And I think like my words of wisdom were one thing that I actually used as a way to keep myself on track was like, I basically just took some time to think about like what three things would I want people to associate, like what I want the interviewer to walk away remembering mm-hmm. about me, like three words, three mm-hmm. concepts. Mm-hmm. And that really helped me kind of like focus on the parts of the narrative that really, if you do it, I encourage you to pick things that are genuine to try to convey who you really are and what you really care about and what you're passionate about. But it could be a good way to help you kind of like pare down and think through like what is the message that I really want folks to see. So I don't know if I think it builds on exactly what Meenam said, but like it's probably a process. I don't know if there's a single straight answer. And we're almost at time, but I do want to make sure that the panelists have had their final say as well here. And unless we get booted off here, I think we could probably do that.
I'll try to say something real quick. We had planned, as I said, to sort of put our like, what's our golden best nugget of advice for people. A lot of that has been integrated into whatever. But if I could recommend, you know, one specific thing for you to do, it would be make sure that you have like a pretty comprehensive knowledge of like what all of your past projects and experiences actually have been and what you want to use each of them to represent. And then go find examples of people talking about user research projects. There are lots of those on the internet, on conference talks, on Medium or sort of blog posts from specific companies. Find the sort of framework and the language with how they're presenting a actual user research project that took place in an industry context, and then try to rewrite your project story in the style of that story. Use their language and their framework and like what it is that they emphasized and sort of went into to describe your previous work. And if there's sort of, if that feels easy and like it's good overlap, then awesome. This is probably a great job path for you. And that project is a great one to mention in interviews. If that feels really, really hard, then either, you know, there may be a different sort of version of a research job in the industry that is more appropriate for experience, or you just need to spend some more time finding what the right projects of yours are to fit in that, because it's not always the case. Often it's explicitly opposite that your most important and most sort of the projects you're proudest of from your academic career mm-hmm. are not going to necessarily be the ones that you need to advertise the most. I talked way more about a single LSA poster that no one came to than I did about any of my like fancy proceedings or anything in these. So you kind of got to broaden your scope of yourself and figure out how to sort of recast it in the language people are used to hearing.
Yeah, great advice.
Thank you so much. Very valuable information. Thank you. For sure.
And Meenam, do you want to give us your kind of your hot take, your 30 second, what's your golden nugget?
Again, linguistics is our superpower. So, and one of the things, one of the very important principles in linguistics or communication is audience design, I think. So job seeking is also audience design. You have to know your audience. Otherwise, it's not going to work. You have to, and then each and every audience members are different. So do not just follow that the wisdoms that people say you have to have a portfolio, you have to have this certificate or anything. You have to learn your target. You have to know your audience and then target. Do the networking if it's necessary, and do some kind of, you can earn certificates that's targeted for that position. Again, it's kind of funny that I'm saying that because I didn't know my target and I just spreaded my resume, but it was time consuming. So if you can, it's better to have a target and definitely do audience design,
and you that's can do great it. That's great. Thank you, Meenam Kim. Thank you, Josh Martin. Thank you from me, and thank you all for being here. We truly appreciate it, and really so glad to have this audience to speak to you. Please do remember to complete the feedback survey that I think if it's already been shared, if it's not been shared, it'll be shared soon. And I think at least I know from Josh's conversation earlier today that like you can reach out to Josh, you can reach out to me, meet up. I leave it up to you to decide. But if you have questions or follow ups, you know, I think you'll find linguists tend to be pretty nice people and probably happily answer your questions. So on that, we'll respect everyone's time and I think we'll say goodbye.
Linguistics Career Launch is an ongoing nonprofit project currently led by volunteers that works to educate students, faculty, administrators, and industry employers about the value of linguists in business, government, nonprofit, and tech. The LCL has held two online boot camps during which attendees were able to learn from and interact with career linguists, as well as gain practical experience in career management skills. Videos of all our recorded sessions are available on our YouTube channel. You can get in touch at linguisticscareerlaunch@gmail.com.